trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there and welcome to the show. Very happy to have you join us today as we take another foray into wrong think. Turns out it's almost essential to keeping your sanity in a time where, there's a lot of stuff being utilized to separate us from reality. I'm pleased to welcome Caleb France back to the program. Caleb is program manager at Young Voices. He's also the host of the History podcast Profiles in Liberty, rather. And Caleb, normally we talk about, a specific figure or something. You have a topic today, though, that has great relevance now, that apparently has had relevance numerous times historically: misinformation and censorship.
That's right, Brian. I recently had an article go up in Real Clear History last week, and it's all about sort of the history of misinformation and censorship in the United States. And this is actually nothing new. It feels like, this discourse that we have around, whether it be Twitter, whether it be social media, Elon Musk is currently really driving that discourse really full steam. But we've seen it with COVID and everything like that. But this is something that really led to one of our first major crises in America, and that was whether or not the First Amendment to the Constitution was actually going to mean anything after only less than 10 years, really, after it was written and incorporated into the Constitution. And that is, of course, the story that I kind of tell in this article is about the Alien and Sedition Acts under the John Adams administration of 1798. And while today we don't see any explicit threats of necessarily legal threats or laws being passed through to outright censor information or misinformation, so to speak, a lot of the arguments are eerily similar to what we saw then as it is today. So I think it's incredibly timely, and it's incredibly important to understand just why we said, no, even things like misinformation is necessary in a state of freedom, because you have to be able to use your own reason and your own your own thinking capabilities to be able to decipher between what's real and what's not, and not just rely upon the experts.
Amen. Let's talk a little bit about what brought the Alien and Sedition Acts into being.
Yeah, so I think, there's a lot of similarities there, too, between what we experience today and then. There was the biggest thing being the threat of war with France on the horizon. A lot of Americans after the French Revolution were becoming especially weary of relations with France. And a lot of Republicans, or Jeffersonian Republicans, not necessarily Republicans as we know them today, they were very much more sympathetic to the ideas of having Frenchmen and supporting Frenchmen, whereas the Federalists were incredibly against it because they were looking at the bloodbath that was going on in France. And that scared a lot of people. Fear was a major driving factor in the eventual passage of these acts. And in order to try to prevent the outbreak of war, the Federalists and John Adams, President John Adams at the time, decided to pass the Alien and Sedition Acts. The first three were involving immigration and aliens at the time. But the last one is, I think, especially chilling with the Sedition Acts, which it explicitly outlawed, quote, writing, printing, and uttering or publishing any false, scandalous, or malicious content. Now, what exactly that means is kind of where we get into some discussion and some areas of disagreement as they did back then. And that is the catch 22, is that it was up to really the government. And what they decided was that meant that you can't say anything mean about us, or we're going to throw you in jail, or we're going to suspend your right to freedom of speech. And the Republicans, most notably Thomas Jefferson, looked at that and said, this is a direct violation of the First Amendment. But more importantly, it's a direct violation of the spirit that this country was founded on in the first place. There was a long drawn out battle back and forth between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the Republicans, many of whom went to jail because of this act. But fortunately, the Republicans at the time won the day, and they won the election in 1800. And I think Thomas Jefferson, basically in his inaugural address, said it best when he said that the spirit of free speech, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but the spirit of free speech is fundamental to battling misinformation, because only then can good ideas be left to combat it.
Wow. I'm shocked, if only for the reason, you know, the ink wasn't even dry on the Bill of Rights.
It really
when
wasn't.
When this became an issue, you'd think, well, if they had some time to forget, they had some time, you know, down the road. But these were the actual people who helped to frame the Constitution. I guess that indicates we may all have blind spots, no matter our place in history.
That's right. Yeah. These were some of the very people who helped not only frame the Constitution, but the Declaration of Independence. John Adams was integral in making sure that the Declaration of Independence passed, and that independence itself passed. And yet he was the person with his signature on these pieces of legislation. And I think that goes to show that really, no matter, you know, we kind of risk getting into sort of a cult of personality whenever we go team red versus team blue, but really none of that really matters. Only thing that really matters is the principles and the ideas that are being espoused. And in the context of 1798 to 1800, those principles and ideas were about the freedom of speech, the ability for reason to be left alone to combat any sort of false or malicious or misinformation. And I think that's very much the same case to be said today.
So I noticed you compared, for instance, you know, the Sedition Act to being deplatformed. I have to ask you, as you've seen this back and forth in our day, obviously the founding generations were able to work it out. How likely do you feel it is that we're going to be able to find a middle ground where, you know, people can work with one another and not want to throw anyone who disagrees in jail, figuratively or literally?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the threat of jail is not something that most people face today for simply saying something that may be false, or saying something that may be against the norm. But obviously, the sentiments are very similar, and that is basically what I was trying to get at in this article. Over the past few years, it's been a little discouraging, but I do think there is some light at the end of the tunnel here. I think a lot of people are kind of waking up to the fact that the gatekeepers who are saying this is what the right information is, and just having them proven to be incorrect time and again, and having to kind of chew their own words and walk back their own statements, has done real damage to their own credibility. And I think more and more people are starting to wake up and starting to see that. So in the spirit of what Jefferson talked about in his 1801 inaugural address, I think that reason is starting to be left alone to combat any sort of misinformation by itself.
All right, let's take a moment here. And Caleb, tell everyone where they can follow you as a writer, also where they can follow your Profiles in Liberty podcast.
Yeah, so Profiles in Liberty is available anywhere where you can get your podcast. Season 2 recently wrapped up. I am working on season 3, which should be debuting sometime this fall. And then I occasionally write as well, as we discussed today. This piece was in Real Clear History, so if you want to go check it out, I encourage you to do so. In any of my other pieces would be published through Young Voices.
Okay, I will have links not only to the article we discussed today, but I'll also have a link to connect them to your podcast, and so people can check this out for themselves. Caleb, I appreciate you doing this this feature with me every other week. Thank you so much, and I can't wait till the next time we get to talk. I want to get kind of a travelogue. You had a chance to go right to the heart of Europe. Maybe we can have you on the show to talk a little bit about what you saw and learned there.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Very happy to welcome Keith Kelch to the program. Keith is a man who wears a lot of hats. You're probably as close to a Renaissance man as I know, Keith. But you are the author of a marvelous book called The High Road, The Future of American Greatness. And you also are leading up some very productive efforts in southern Utah of helping create a community, a sense of community, in a very productive way. I'm going to have you describe more about this. You also have a meeting coming up next week. Where do you want to begin? Talk about your qualifications or talk about the meeting. I think I'm sensing the meeting's kind of urgent.
Yeah, it's an emergency, basically, that we are trying to wake people up. I've been working on the concept of community for over a decade, because I know that if you look at the animal kingdom, you look at all of our great successes in humanity, they always started with just small groups of people. And everyone's frustrated, everyone's upset at the establishment, the political apparatus, the system that we've got ourselves in. And I think the mistake is trying to fix that system or even take it over. What we don't understand in America is we have one of the most powerful rights that any human being has ever had, and that's the right to peacefully assemble, to say, hey, let's lock arms and help each other out. And when I was a kid, I was in an elementary school, and my dad didn't go to Vietnam, but we locked arms with each other, and we would say, hey, get out of my way. My dad just got back to the USA. And it was this kind of camaraderie that I felt even when I was just 6 and 7 years of age. And I didn't know what that meant, but I knew what it felt like. And we've lost that art. We've lost that fellowship. We've lost what it means to be helpful to each other. And that's really what I'm all about.
So I want to just make it clear. This is not just, you know, hey, let's get together and discuss, you know, ideas and philosophize. Some of that may happen in the course of what's going on. But essentially, this is helping people to organize themselves, to focus on building not just what comes next, but what you want to come next. And there's something you explain in your book that to me made a very key difference here. This is not a matter of, hey, come and learn what liberty is, as opposed to come and learn not just about liberty, but community as well as other things, how they work and not just what they are. Help me understand why that's so important to understand the how they work versus just here's what they are.
Well, first, let's define liberty. And liberty is the hand that adds value. So I'm creating a whole critical thinking program for a lot of homeschoolers. But basically, I go into some detail. When you start looking at democracy and liberty, and you actually look at the definition from 100 years ago, 200 years ago, the OED, 1828 Webster's Dictionary, you start finding active meanings, actual meanings to words that show action, not a status of mind, not a subjective internal, you know, hope or dream or whatnot. It's an actual predicate action. For example, take democracy. Democracy is defined as where everybody gets to take part. That's the phrase that you see in a lot of dictionaries, the ability to take part. Yeah, there's a vote in there, but we're all taking part. Well, we don't realize that power in our own system. We just, you know, go into a booth, vote, and don't realize that we have voice that should influence that vote, or that somebody else has a voice that should challenge our vote. That's the real interaction that we're missing. And as a result, a lot of powers come together and they manipulate the vote because they've got all power over the voice. And I believe that they have to be brought back together. I'm not talking about a political movement. I'm talking about any kind of organization we create from here on cannot be centrally controlled and it cannot be top down, period. That is doomed to fail. And so it's an emergency because we have a meeting next Wednesday at the Washington County, at Washington City Library at 6:30. Come and just listen. And we're going to go over the complete Citizens Atlas. It's a complete different way to look at the belief systems that people have in politics. And briefly, in just a kind of a teaser, we see the far right and the far left, but there's something called the low right and the low left, and we never talk about that. And there's something called the high road. It's the high right and the high left, and we've completely lost what those beliefs are. And because of that, we're in a battle between the far right and the low left. That's the battle in America. And the far right is going to lose that battle until somebody takes the high road. We're going to talk about what that high road is. We'll talk about the history of the low left. It starts with Plato. It goes all the way down to Malthusianism. It goes all the way down to Hobbes, Leviathan, just a complete history of what the low left has wanted for a very long time. And now they're in power, and here's what they want, and here's what we're up against. That's why it's an emergency, because this is not just an idea on the right, far, you know, weird space out there in the field somewhere. It's center stage now.
Yeah.
There are people in power that actually want to kill you. They don't really have any value for humanity at all. And we are now entering what the Chinese entered into, what they called the Great Leap Forward, but we're now the Great Reset. It's the same thing.
Wow.
It's the exact same thing.
Keith, something that you have impressed on me over the years is how essential consent is. And that's, you know, the consent of the governed. That could be common consent in, you know, in how much authority do these people, you know, that are telling us lock your business down or do this, you know, if there's legitimate authority or not. Right now we're seeing a pretty big push on their part. I mean, Dr. Fauci last week just was saying, you know, the court decision that struck down the mask mandate on airplanes, that should never should have been in the courts. This is a CDC matter. It's like, are you saying you're above the law? Because that's a lot what it sounds like.
You know, here's a solution for that. We don't need to fight Fauci. All we need to do is take 150 of the best herbalists, naturopaths, homeopaths, surgeons that are all on the same page and say, we are creating the American Center for Disease Control, and it's completely created from the bottom up. We all support it. We fund it. And it's an incredible dialogue of bottom up discussion. You know, consent, and we just launch it and say, this is it. I'm sorry, we don't listen to the Center for Disease Control, which is funded by we know who. Mm-hmm. We listen to XYZ, which is funded by us. We don't realize that power. We just keep fighting the same system and complaining about that system imposing authoritarian on us without realizing the power we have.
Make it obsolete.
Just make it obsolete. Just ignore it and say, I'm sorry, but you're not listening to the American Center for Disease Control, which we created ourselves. We think that we need a government to fund it, a government to support it, a government to lift up. We don't. Now, I'm not about launching stuff like that. My main concern is that there's an awakening, meaning there's some bad stuff happening, and then there's a renaissance. We need to have both. We need to recognize that we need to see what things are happening, and then the renaissance right after that.
Okay. Tell people how they can get involved in this meeting on May 4th.
May 4th is really just, we're having it the first Wednesday of every month, literally. Okay. And right now it's at the Washington City Library. We'd love to have you come. We're going to have a new speaker every week, every month, actually. And it's just somebody from our group, somebody from the community. We're not going to some, you know, important person who's made a lot of money and thinking that they have a lot of understanding or great vision. Sometimes they have vision on business, but they don't have any vision on cultural strength and what makes for culture. That's from within us. So we have a new person speaking every first Wednesday of every month. But if you're interested, come to our networking group. It's every Thursday, 9:15, local Commonwealth. We'd love to have you. It's a business networking organization. We don't allow you to pitch your own business. We pitch that for you. We're growing. Pretty amazing what happens at that networking meeting.
Keith, I'm going to have you back on the show early next week to talk about this again, because I really want people to come and see what you're doing and understand we have so much more power than we think. Thank you for leading out and thank you for organizing. I'll have links in the show notes to get people hooked up with you.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Just want to take a moment here to thank my sponsors, including the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage, located in St. George, Utah. Yes, indeed. If you are shopping for a home, you know that there's a lot of other shoppers out there right now. That means it's a competitive market. That means you've got to be quick. You've got to have yourself squared away. You got to know what you qualify for. Here's where the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage comes in with her decades, yes, decades of experience and a company that has the clout to get you the loan you need in a timely manner. She's the one you need to talk to. You can call Heather at 435-703-4522. Heather's NMLS ID is 715386. Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender, and any of my listeners living in the states of either Utah or Idaho would be well served to reach out to the Heather Turner team. Well, I don't mean to cause alarm here, but you are aware that we live in times of crisis. And nothing makes that more clear than the fact that the current administration in America, the Biden administration, announced yesterday it is launching a Ministry of Truth through the Department of Homeland Security. Oh, and wait, there's even more. Apparently, they have found the Karen of Karens to head up this agency, all in the name of stopping disinformation. I've got Jordan Schachtel's take on this from his dossier Substack. Ministry of Truth. Biden admin appoints serial propagandist to launch disinformation governance board at DHS. We're talking about a person by the name of Nina Jankowicz. Jankowicz? There we go. A Democratic activist who was appointed to lead the department, no friend to free speech absolutism. So when you hear talk about free speech and you're all right, yeah, I understand there's a battle on about free speech. Just understand, there really is a battle in it. There is an official effort underway to throttle the free flow of information. And now that it's finding a home in the Department of Homeland Security, I'm guessing they're going to get a little more serious about it. Speaking up is about as easy as it's going to get for a while. Jordan Schachtel says, in showcasing its commitment to waging a propaganda war against American citizens who defy the current thing, the Biden administration is standing up a disinformation governance board at the infamous security theater agency that is the Department of Homeland Security. He writes, the White House has appointed Nina Jankowicz, a Democrat activist and Ukrainian government consultant, to run what amounts to DHS Pravda. Other staffing announcements have not yet been made public, but this is the tweet that Nina Jankowicz sent out yesterday. Cat's out of the bag. Here's what I've been up to the last 2 months and why I've been a bit quiet on here. Honored to be serving in the Biden administration and helping shape our counter-disinformation efforts. Now, a self-proclaimed disinformation and democratization expert, Jankowicz has spent the last several years at a variety of left-wing think tanks in addition to doing consulting work for the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry. That's according to Politico. And she has a long track record of engaging in hyper-political activity for her benefactors, having engaged in several propaganda campaigns targeted at President Donald Trump and others. Most notably, she falsely labeled the infamous Hunter Biden laptop as Russian disinformation and repeatedly claimed that there was evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. And from here, he just includes a handful of her greatest disinformation hits. So one of them was so disgraceful, the questions concerning the Russian witch hunt were leaked to the media. No questions on collusion. Oh, I see. You've made up a phony crime, collusion that never existed, and an investigation begun with illegally leaked classified information. Nice. This was a tweet from Trump. Her response, narrator, there were, in fact, many questions about collusion. Yep, she's a spinmeister, all right. Here's a tweet from Rusty Weiss. The Biden administration's new executive director of the Disinformation Governance Board, Nina Jankowicz, cast doubt that the Hunter Biden laptop, confirmed to be real by multiple outlets, actually belonged to him. She called it a Trump campaign project. Here's another tweet. She talks about back on the laptop from hell. Apparently, Biden notes former 50 national security officials and five former CIA heads that believe the laptop is a Russian influence op. Trump says Russia, Russia, Russia. And finally, here's one more. Biden, this is Jack Posobiec, saying here is Biden's new disinformation commissar claiming militarized Trump supporters were going to show up to the polls with weapons. This is from yesterday, actually, in which CNN Newsroom was quoting Nina Jankowicz saying, I think there's a general concern about Trump supporters potentially showing up armed to the polls and these sorts of voter suppression. That's illegal everywhere. Anything like that ever happen? I don't remember anything like that happening. So back to Jordan Schachtel's story. He says the self-proclaimed disinformation expert also seems to have a big issue with people she deems free speech absolutists. This is a tweet again from Nina Jankowicz saying, last week I told NPR, I shudder to think about if free speech absolutists were taking over more platforms, what that would look like for the marginalized communities, which are already shouldering disproportionate amounts of this abuse. Apparently, her conversation with Michael Martin or Michelle Martin was on how women face disproportionate attacks online. One expert shares some of the details. I guess they're talking about that reporter. What's her name? Taylor Lorenz, who goes around doxing people and then gets a little taste of her own medicine and finds out, hey, that's not that much fun. Oh, man. And here she is. Here's Nina Jankowicz talking about when you clicked I agree to the terms of service, you know, that's when you gave up your right to free speech. Free speech is not and has never been guaranteed on private platforms. Now, she's also an established unelected mask enforcer, known to lecture random people in the street about the need to comply with the safety regime. So this is Nina Jankowicz responding to a tweet about Boris Johnson announcing that mask wearing is mandatory again in England on public transport and in shops. She says, good. I totally avoided public transit when I was in London last week because of lax masking. Also got into an argument with an English woman across from me on the Eurostar who refused to put her mask on. So, yes. Karen, I believe the title does fit her. But now they've put her in charge of the Ministry of Truth. Jordan Schachtel says, whether we've reached peak clown world yet remains to be seen, but it feels like we're getting close. She shudders to think about if free speech absolutists were taking over more platforms. It's not the absolutists that scare her. It's the idea that there would be unrestricted discussion. The people would be able to freely share points of view, ignore the ones that they don't like, and embrace the ones they do. I'm not encouraging you, by the way, to go spend more time on Twitter, but what little time I've spent on Twitter in the last couple of days since Elon Musk's takeover or his, how can I put this without making it sound like he's a comic book supervillain, but since his purchase or his offer on Twitter's been accepted, a lot of the throttling of information has been relaxed. And it's astonishing the number of people who are like, holy cow, you know, I jumped 50,000 followers in 2 days or more. Something, Hinky, was going on there. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, these are people who you should listen to every word they say and hang on every word. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't hang on anything that I say either. But you can't choose if you don't have the opportunity to look at different points of view. And that's the whole point behind free speech. Yes, there are people out there who say things that I find reprehensible. There are people who are out there who just are toxic. But I am not going to be one to clamor for government or any other officialdom, even in the corporate world, to try to squeeze down on them and keep them from, you know, saying things that I don't agree with. Why? Because I have things that I'm trying to say as well. And there are people out there who I think have very worthwhile messages. And you can't allow that kind of official throttling of the flow of information and speech to take place without damaging the good as well as the bad. Oh, Brian, you're probably just oversimplifying things. And maybe I am. But I don't think so. I mean, we give a lot of lip service to free speech. Okay, well, I give a lot of lip service to free speech. But I really think that it's the key. With all the crises that are going on, all the different plays for power, all the ways that people in authority are trying to assume a little more control of your life, you know, for your own good, you and I have got to be able to speak as clearly and freely and unequivocally as possible to the people around us. And they don't want that. The people in power do not like this. It threatens them. And so now, in the name of fighting disinformation and misinformation, they are unleashing a modern-day ministry of truth, headed up by someone who appears to have that Karen way of looking at the world. Come on, what could possibly go wrong? I'm sure it's going to be fun. And we'll all be so safe.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Quick shout out here to Dixie Chiropractic. You can visit their website at dixiechiro.com. This is Dr. Ward Wagner. If you are suffering from car accident injuries, if you have neuropathy, if you have bulging herniated discs, first of all, you know what pain is like. Secondly, you can get relief. Talk to Dixie Chiropractic. They've got a couple of specials that I think would be a great way for you to get acquainted with them. This is particularly for my listeners in Southern Utah. Contact DixieChiro.com for neuropathy. Ask about the $99 Calmare treatment plus massage. If you're dealing with bulging herniated discs, here's a $99 intro special treat with two treatments plus massage. Get a hold of Dr. Ward Wagner at DixieChiro.com. All right, I was on a little bit of a tear in the last segment, and I think rightly so, but nonetheless, I want to give you something positive for this last segment of this hour. And this is Barry Brownstein's latest article. I love this because a lot of people think they know what liberty is. Very few, though, can explain how it works. And Barry Brownstein shares some of the marvelous wisdom of Leonard E. Reed about how the threat to liberty is coming from inside the house. He says, "You might be, as I am, alarmed about the future of liberty." And he asks, "How deep are the roots of liberty when so many submit to authoritarian measures in response to COVID and approve the use of coercion against those less eager to comply? Unable to visualize alternatives, public acceptance of top-down coercive solutions to COVID demonstrates a willingness to sacrifice liberty for the promise of safety." But Barry Brownstein says to restore liberty, our understanding of liberty needs to deepen. The prolific author and educator Leonard Reed is most famous for his timeless essay, I Pencil. In one of his earlier works, Students of Liberty, based on a 1950 talk he delivered to economic students at University of Pittsburgh, Reed clarifies in simple terms what liberty is and the mindset that must be restored. Reed writes, "Liberty, the absence of coercion or violence, is not readily comprehended." He explains that the absence of coercion and violence is not readily comprehended because relatively few among those who've lived on this earth have been able to visualize any order in society or any progress by those who compose it, except as the will of some has been imposed on the actions of others. Now, tellingly, Reed adds, "History, for the most part, is a record of violence. Present-day talking and writing, history in the making, for the most part, is an argument for the rearrangement of the rules of violence. So history's not made merely by governments and bureaucrats, but by our fellow Americans. And Barry Brownstein says the results of this Rasmussen poll conducted earlier this year reveal a readiness of the American public to rearrange the rules of violence. Quote, 59% of Democratic voters would favor a government policy requiring citizens remain confined to their homes at all times except for emergencies if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine. Nearly 48% of Democratic voters think federal and state governments should be able to fine or imprison individuals who publicly question the efficacy of the existing COVID-19 vaccines on social media, television, radio, or in online or digital publications. 45% of Democrats would favor governments requiring citizens to temporarily live in designated facilities or locations if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine. 47% of Democrats favor a government tracking program for those who won't get the COVID-19 vaccine. And finally, 29% of Democratic voters would temporarily removing parents' custody of their children if parents refuse to take the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, Barry Brownstein says, look, to be sure, a clear majority of all likely voters oppose these measures. Yet a terrifying wind of justifying violence is blowing, a wind that an alarming number of voters of all stripes are welcoming. Having aroused primitive fears, Dr. Fauci, Bill Gates, presidents and governors, supported by mainstream news and social media censorship, purported to assume responsibility for our health decisions. And people felt relieved from the burden of exploring what they can do to boost their immune system and sustain their health. Again, here's a quote from Leonard Reed exploring the consequences of outsourcing personal responsibility. Quote, once the reliance on self is removed, once the responsibility for a portion of our being has been assumed by another, be that other a person, a set of persons, or the police force, we cease to think about or apply our ingenuity to the activities thus transferred. When the agency to which the transfer is made is the state, an agency of coercion, is it any wonder that creative thought diminishes to near non-existence? End quote. Ooh, that one hurts. It hurts because it rings true. Barry Brownstein says we become convinced that there are no other solutions, so we stop looking for them. Reed explains, creative thought is abandoned by man as a free and thus a creative agent and assumed by man as an agent of coercion. Coercion by its nature is incapable of creativeness. So no wonder with the government in charge, top-down coercive solutions are prioritized and efforts to discover effective treatments for COVID are actively thwarted. He says, if you're tired of being on the defense opposing endless coercive measures or want less talk and more action, Reed's Students of Liberty is a balm for your liberty-minded soul. But this isn't a call to organize and elect the right people. The movie When a Stranger Calls provides a metaphor that exposes the human tendency to see our problems as far removed from where they really are. In the movie, the psychotic killer calling the babysitter was not far away. The calls were coming from inside the house. And the real threat to liberty and the means to restore liberty are closer than we think. From here, Barry Brownstein talks about love versus violence. He says those Rasmussen poll results might trigger a defensive response. Out to bloody hell with those who would trample on our rights. But he says, think again. Some of those with illiberal views are our family members, colleagues, and neighbors. And Reed points us to a fundamental fact of human existence, and that is humanity is interdependent. He writes that our existence on this earth beyond a primitive state requires a recognition of this fact and a knowledge of how to deal with it skillfully. Reed observes, how to deal with it, meaning interdependence, skillfully, is where divergence of opinion in social affairs originates. This divergence takes the shape of two diametrically opposed recommendations. One commends life in accordance with the principle of violence. The other commends life in accordance with the principle of love. Now, when we think about violence, we think of criminals or governments waging wars. Reed asks us to broaden our understanding of violence and reflect on the many ways we support violence. Mandating funding government programs we don't support with our tax dollars is an act of violence. Violence includes actions taken to prevent people from making peaceful decisions on how to use their energy and property. Now, Reed is clear. The cause of our ills is a reliance on the principle of violence.
Violence breeds violence. The more of it we practice, the more of it we'll rationalize as justified or even needed. And Barry Brownstein points out and asks, will the path in our country, will the path our country is going down lead to the violent horrors we're witnessing today in Shanghai, where over 25 million people are trapped in their apartments with little food? Now, Reed writes, the alternative to violence is love. Now, he's not referring to romantic love. Instead, he recognizes the virtues of love, saying love, as used here, refers to the application of the kindly virtues in human relations, such as tolerance, charity, good sportsmanship, the right of another to his views, integrity, the practice of not doing to others what you would not have them do to you, and other attributes which result in mutual trust, voluntary cooperation, and justice. But Reed also says love only prospers in liberty. He says love generates and grows among free men only with difficulty among men ruled by the principles of violence. As violence begets violence, so does one personal act of kindness beget another. It is then in liberty that man's natural aptness evolves toward its potentiality and its goodness. Now, Barry Brownstein says Reed sees the truth. Love prospers in liberty. It's also true that liberty prospers only with love. So only with love will you accept the principles of a free society. The rights and freedom you cherish for yourself are only possible when you cherish the same rights for everyone else. It's twisted to believe you have the freedom to choose a medical procedure for yourself and at the same time believe others should make the same choice as you. Now, there's so much more to this article. I'm going to leave it for you to discover. Barry Brownstein finishes by saying, look, it's easy to despair. Fearing the outlook for liberty has never been bleaker. Reed might say the outlook for liberty has never been greater. Why would he say that? Awaken to the erosion of liberty, there is more grist for the mill to facilitate our learning than at any time in recent memory. We have more opportunities to become advanced students of liberty. As each of us answers the call, the threat to liberty will diminish. And Barry Brownstein says, all are called, but are enough of us ready to heed that call? Well, he says the future of liberty depends on our answer. See, I don't take talk about calls and callings lightly. I think it's a real thing. And if I can make you just a little uncomfortable, I don't think you would be listening to this program if you didn't feel a call at some level to be part of the solution and to stand up and to make your influence felt.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.